Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure. Thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by those devastating diagnoses. You can hear those stories and more, including the Williams F1 team's planning director, Richard Jones, right now on your chosen podcast player. The charity work all year round to help develop research and raise awareness. And if you're looking to challenge yourself this new year, why not sign up to the Brain Tumor Charity's Brain Power Challenge? Simply choose a challenge that will boost your brain health, from meditation to 10K runs to mega Sudoku, and set your challenge to either silver, gold or platinum difficulty level. Every penny you raise will be spent on the charity's medical research. £250 covers the cost of one day of world-class medical research into kinder and better treatments for brain tumours, which really does make a difference. Follow the Brain Tumor Charity on social media to learn more and to sign up. Boost your brain today to boost other brains tomorrow, because a cure can't wait. This podcast is brought to you by F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One this year, we're all over it. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first-class hotels and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when checking out online. So, what are you waiting for? Experience the 2022 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at f1experiences.com.
Hello, my name's Tim Sylvie, and today we're joined by two men who you may not have heard of, but you are definitely aware of their work if you're an F1 fan. And if you watched the last race of the 2021 season, you'll probably want to buy them both a beer. One's based here in the UK, the other in Bahrain. And did you know, Harry Benjamin, you probably did, that in 2004, Bahrain staged the Middle East's first Formula One Grand Prix, and the first race took place at the Bahrain International Circuit on the 4th of April, and it was such a success that it was given the award of Best Organised Grand Prix by the FIA. But I am not going to ask you who was on the podium that day, because... You thought this was going to be a walkover. So for those listening, we've got this new software that we're using called Riverside, which is meant to clean up our feed. And it does that brilliantly, but it gives me a 3 or 4 second delay when we're talking. So we've been through this whole introduction once already. And Harry has already answered my question, which was who was on the podium that day, which was Harry.
Schumacher, which I got anyway, yeah. Barrichello and Button.
Okay. So you knew that already, so I'm not going to give you that question again, but can you name 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 other drivers that were on the grid that day?
Heidfeld.
Correct.
Kubica.
Incorrect.
Shit. Well, when did he come into F1? Montoya. Montoya.
Correct.
Oh my God, 2004. I will say Panis. Panis.
Yes, Panis, 3.
So who's that? Heidfeld, Panis, and who's the other one I said?
And Montoya.
Montoya.
Yeah.
And Ralf Schumacher.
Ralf Schumacher, he was, that's number 4. Think who we've had on the podcast.
How many did you want from me?
6. Make it 5.
Christian Kleen?
Kleen was in there, yes. Yes, he was. Yes. Can you give me one more?
Weber.
Oh, you got there in the end. Well done.
Need I remind, I was born in 97, so this is very early, early F1 days.
Yeah, no, fair play to you. Well, we tried with our other software. We failed. We've been through the introduction again, but we're here. And shall I introduce today's guests, plural, 2 of them?
I think we've made them wait long enough.
I think we have. So today we're joined by the Managing Director of Driven International, Ben Wiltshire, and Mark Hughes, the MD of Mark One Consulting. Both men have impacted the Formula One World Championship massively. They were responsible collectively with others for the modification of the Yas Marina circuit layout with the alterations to the North Hairpin, the South Marina at the beginning of Turn 11 and the hotel section at the beginning of Turn 17. They were tasked with improving the show and I think we can all confirm they succeeded. We're here to learn all about track design and delve into the detail of that World Championship defining race and the impact they had on it. Ben, Mark, thank you for your patience and welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Harry. It's good to be here.
Thanks, guys.
Great to have you both on. Well, first of all, where are you both joining us today? So you're in different areas, aren't you? Mark, you're in Bahrain, right?
I am in not so sunny Bahrain. A bit chilly here today, but yeah, I'm based over in the Middle East.
How far away from the circuit are you?
It's about 20 minutes. Bahrain is not the biggest place. It's a pretty small island. So, 20 minutes down the road and we can go and enjoy the track and the kart track there.
Oh, great. And Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I'm in sunny Hampshire. So, tucked away in the office today. But, yeah, just down in Hampshire outside of London. So, all good.
Very nice. Well, let's kick things off then and I'll come back to you, Mark. How long have you actually been in the Middle East for? Presumably it was work that took you there originally.
Yeah, so I came here to run the Bahrain Grand Prix. I joined the circuit in 2004 and was the operations director there for 5.5 years before moving to Abu Dhabi when I first met Tim, I think, and did a stint in Abu Dhabi before going on to run the track in India, the Budd circuit, which was on the calendar for 3 years. Mm. And then went over to back to Abu Dhabi for a couple of years before starting my own business in 2013. And we now work for multiple circuits around the world.
It's impressive stuff. It really is. And as Mark rightly says, we met many years ago, and I don't think we really got to know each other terribly well. We were both in the operations department, and I was running traffic and transportation, a bit of a department.
Yes, with our good friend Dana, of course.
With our good friend Dana, who sadly left us a few months ago. We actually had an episode dedicated in his name. Very sad state of affairs.
Yeah.
Now, Ben, let's come to you. Your, I guess, racing career started literally in racing. You were a racing driver. How come we're not seeing you on the Formula One grid?
Clearly I wasn't good enough, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I never really I raced a lot in karts when I was younger, and I raced in super karts as well, you know, on the long circuits, so the gearbox karts at, you know, around the Silverstone Grand Prix circuit in Donington and places like that. And for me, it was just good fun. I actually started racing quite late. I grew up around motorsport. My dad worked in Formula One and touring cars. So as a kid, I was always walking around the paddocks and going to different circuits. But really, my thing as a teenager, I was really, I did mountain bike racing, downhill mountain bike racing for many, many years until I realized I was hurting myself way too frequently. So I thought I'd give supercarts a go instead. And turned out I was quite good at it. So yeah, I raced in the British Championships in supercarts, and then still now do some saloon car racing. And for me, it's just fun, but it definitely helps with the circuit design to be able to, you know, see things from a driver's perspective, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I think Ben's being very modest as well. He's frustratingly fast in a go-kart.
Is he?
Really annoying. Yeah.
One of those. I hate those people. Well, Ben, we have our karting day coming up on the 31st of March. So
I'll be there.
Get your team in.
Yeah, I need to do it.
Yeah, 100%. Well, let's jump right into it. Let's start at Yas Marina Circuit. You both had a big influence on that racetrack. I know you worked with Karun Chandok as well, who's one of our former podcast guests, to redesign, re-engineer the original Tilke design circuit to try and improve the show. And I know that Yas Marina Circuit in the past has been criticized for producing a bit of a procession. So take us back to the start of this process. How does something like this happen? How do you get to a point where somebody is coming to you or you're going to them saying, we need some help here to improve the layout of the show? What does that process look like right in the early stages? How does it happen?
It goes back to a phone call from Yas Marina. So since leaving Yas Marina Circuit back in 2012, I've kept a very good relationship with them. I still help them occasionally with a lot of their drag racing and stuff like that. I've still got a lot of friends there. They're very aware of the work that Mark One have been doing around the world in developing new tracks. And they contacted me and said, look, we're frustrated. 2020 wasn't the best season for anyone in motorsport with COVID. But it was particularly hard on the circuits because normally as an event, you organize a race, Abu Dhabi organizes amazing concerts, an incredible vending area, the parties on the boats, all of the razzmatazz that goes with the race. When you take all of that razzmatazz away and you're left with a race that doesn't have a lot of overtaking and gets a lot of criticism, it left a bit of a sour taste in people's mouths. And to be fair to the Emirati management of the circuit, they said, look, We now realise we've got to do something about this track. And they started the conversation with Formula One and worked with Ross Brawn's team, in particular a guy called Craig Wilson, to look at how they could modify the circuit. So the original concept for the changes came from them. They did a report looking at different areas of the track and how they could create a number of changes that would hook together to create a more exciting lap. And they did that predominantly based on the 2022 regulations, and so not necessarily for this year. But the management at the circuit said, look, we want to try and do the changes as quickly as possible. So they picked up the phone and called us in February and said, is this something that you could project manage it for us and do the detailed design for and look after all of the FIA safety requirements? And so I said, yeah, it's something we could do, and I wanted to bring Ben and the guys from Driven International into that project. And it started from there. It was an amazing phone call to receive. It started off with a really, a number of very interesting video calls with the management team and with Formula One. And we started to look at what they'd already planned and how we could make that a reality. And I think that what a lot of people don't realize is that modifying an existing track is much harder than building one from scratch. it was an enormous challenge, and we had a very short time frame to do it because Yas had pre-bookings for the track in at the end of September, beginning of October. So everything had to be done in a very short time frame, and these things always take a bit longer than anyone thinks they will.
So it's a massive project to undertake, especially as you allude to there, when it's already a built track. Ben, you're then brought in fairly early on as well. What are you thinking? Where the hell do you start? Is someone basically giving a track map and putting that down in front of you? You go, okay, here's what we kind of have in mind. What do you think? How do we do it? And what do you do next? Do you start getting the spades and the diggers out?
I mean, you pretty much put it well, where we presented with a track map. So, I mean, the most common thing is that we receive like drawings or layouts. And this came, you know, from Formula One and the discussions that have been had with Yas. And there's a kind of a layout given to us that's the almost like the vision of what the circuit could be, where the improvements could be. But obviously our job then is to go, well, how feasible is this? You know, can you actually build what we're seeing on here? And I spend a lot of time as well looking at like what the fans are saying and reading up reports of what the drivers are saying around the circuit. And that has an influence on some of the thinking as well. But when we first receive the maps from Formula One, we then look at the detail of how that could be implemented on the ground. So for example, the North hairpin, so the first part of the lap that we changed, where previously there was a chicane, the television flattens that out hugely. So anyone that's watched it on the television probably thinks that's quite a flat piece of circuit. When you go there in real life, and you see it at one-to-one scale, it's actually quite undulating and you've got all sorts of camber and crests going on. So the first thing we start to do is overlay the sort of 2D sketches and actually see whether it can all tie together on the ground. And so that really, the first part of the job was taking the layout and then kind of fine tuning it really into reality. So we'll start looking at, you know, how much the ground is moving. Can spectators see the circuit? That was a big consideration down at the hairpin. You know, what's the best viewing? What are the runoff requirements for the FIA? Will they be happy with it and approve it? And then also looking at, we start running our own simulations as well to look at like fine tuning the track. And that's where Karun comes on board as well. And we have him driving in the simulator. So we really start to fine tune their layouts that are given to us as a brief.
Ben, when you've got someone like Karun working with you, who's got that driver perspective, will he be like, well, don't put a runoff area there, put a barrier so that if you go off, there's a penalty, rather than, you know, a big runoff area and you just crack on and you see like we had on lap one. You know, does that happen? Do you have those sorts of discussions?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you ask race drivers and they'll want the fastest corners. They like to feel, you know, they like to feel like it's dangerous. This is what race drivers thrive on. They like the adrenaline. But you know, when we're working with Karun and other drivers, they're one stakeholder in the whole process. So then you'll have, you know, the operations team. So from Mark's perspective, and also the guys that are still on the ground, they're working at Yas. They'll want their priority to be things like, well, how can I get a telehandler out of this gap to recover a car? Yeah. So then Formula One will be looking at it from what's going to look exciting with the cameras. And then you have to think about spectators. So you kind of have to filter out like the important pieces of information you're getting from the drivers. And Karun won't mind me saying this, like he gives us excellent feedback and he can sit in the sim and tell us like how it will feel in the car and what's exciting about it and which option he prefers. But then I have to kind of interpret that and say, well, we can do this, this and this, but I know the FIA won't approve certain things or something won't work on the ground. So it's just one ingredient that filters into it, but it's definitely valuable.
Yeah. I think also to add to that, Ben is a racer, so I think there are areas where he kind of tries to sit on the fence, but sometimes he errs towards the Karun mindset and thinks, actually, I'd quite like it to be a bit quicker through there, or I'd like to change a corner. And the overruling factor is also, does it meet the FIA safety requirements? And whatever we do, we always have to collaborate with the FIA to make sure that we maintain that grade one license. So we spent a lot of time talking with the circuit commission, liaising with Michael Massey, understanding their mindset in terms of track limits and the hot topic of track limits. And as a result, we ended up making some changes to some significant changes to things like curbs to keep people on the track, which I think actually were received pretty well.
Yeah, no, I think all the changes were pretty positive, weren't they? And what just talk us through outside of that North Grandstand hairpin, if you like. What were the other changes, Mark, that you guys put in place?
So the approach that we took, which Formula One and Ross's team took, was to create changes on a number of sections of the track that would hang together to allow the cars to follow more closely. So I think a lot of people, immediate when they knew we were making the changes straight away, we're talking about more overtaking. Ultimately, to overtake, it's in the hands of the driver. What we will do is create opportunities where the cars can follow more closely together. So after the hairpin in the North Grandstand, the next change was down near the marina, just after the support pits, which previously was a series of very slow corners. And I think we removed four corners and replaced that with one very fast sweeping bend, which became a signature corner for the track. Up until then, Yas didn't really have a corner that everyone went, wow, that's an amazing corner. The corner is cambered and the speed carried through there is significant. And then after that, the hotel section always came in for a lot of criticism, partly because the track is off camber. So technically it was a real pain for the drivers and the engineers to get the cars to work properly through there. And what we've done with the team is open up the radius of the corners to make that section much faster. And if you look at the section that physically passes under the hotel, it's almost one corner now. It's one steering input to sweep underneath that part of the hotel. It is much quicker. We also moved the track edge closer to the barrier, as Latifi discovered famously on race day. And we opened up the second to last corner as well. So that's now flat in a Formula One car. And the net result were lap times that were something like 10 seconds a lap quicker than previous races. Wow. And there was more overtaking, which is what everyone had hoped for.
Ben, actually, was it everything you had hoped for? Because yes, we got more overtaking. I think turn five will certainly go down in history as well, as where the move was made. But obviously, it's interesting being about what you said as well, Mark, how, you know, it was initially designed for the 2022 cars. So do you think that next year we'll see even more improvement of action?
Yeah, I think, firstly, yes. I mean, it definitely is delivered. I mean, Mark and I were actually stood at turn five.
Oh no! Race.
We saw Verstappen, you know, do the dive down at turn five on the final lap, and saw it all unfold, which was incredible. I mean, the atmosphere there was electric. It was amazing. So, I think, you know, speaking to the team at Yas Marina, they've all been very happy with the circuit. Obviously, the championship spectacle definitely helped to create the event. But as Mark said, we saw people, you know, we saw Alonso having a go at some overtaking into the hotel section. We saw Perez and Hamilton able to follow more closely through the hotel, and we saw that last lap battle as well. So I think the circuit's delivered. As a designer, you always have more in your pocket that you kind of want to throw at this. And this comes back to what you were saying earlier, like with Caroon as well, you know, with the turn nine, the cambered corner, you know, Caroon was saying, oh, can we have more? Let's put more banking, which obviously I wanted to do as well. I think everyone would want to do in a dream world, but there's certain constraints that you just can't do it in terms of practicalities around the track. So I feel like we've done a good job to make an improvement on the circuit. I think the interesting one for me, though, is like if we were given Yas Island as a blank canvas, what would the track have looked like? You know, if we'd completely designed it from scratch. That plays on my mind a lot. How would we have designed it differently from the scratch? But obviously we were working with, you know, the existing circuit going under the hotel, around the marina and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, very happy with it, but you always want to push to do more and you've got more ideas.
Have you not run a simulation of like a blank canvas Yas Marina circuit?
No, we've not. I don't think we have time, to be honest. Yeah. We did explore other options. Like we did look at putting more banking on the corner. We looked at widening some corners through the hotel as well. But yeah, for various reasons, you get into practicalities of doing it. You know, like the marina, if we put more banking on, then the runoff also has to go up as well. And you end up with like a 7 meter high wall on the outside of the corner, and the guys in the marina can't actually see from their boats. So there's all these sorts of things that you start looking into. But yeah, we did run various options on the sim. So Caroon has driven three or four different kind of slightly varied options of what was built. And that, you know, we used a lot of his feedback on the data and working with Craig at Formula One to sign off on the final design.
I think it's also worth adding that when Formula One initially came up with the concept, they only think of Formula One. But Yas Marina is a 365-day-a-year business, and it is used extensively for product launches, for corporate events, for retail product. And it's a very busy track, but it also hosts other types of racing as well. And what we didn't want to do was affect the GT races that they host there, the Formula 4 national championship. And I think the excitement of the F2 race during the Grand Prix weekend showed that the track changes worked for the other formula as well.
Yeah. Well, four wide at one point, wasn't it? I think that certainly showed it worked for F2.
You were asking Harry about 2022, I think,
yes.
Question. And to Mark's point, I would expect, in theory, the Formula One race to be more like this year's F2 race next year. Yeah. Because like at the moment, if you look at the aero packages on the car, I think the, you know, a car that's following, they lose around 35-40% of the downforce once they're right up, you know, behind another car, which is why they all hang back a second and a half, and you get this kind of train of cars. Next year with the new regulations, I think that number is reduced to something like between 5-10% downforce loss. Wow. So the cars will be even able to follow even better. And in theory, that should apply at all circuits. And obviously, Yas has been designed for that. So, yeah, I would hope we'll see like an F2-style race in the future with the Formula One cars, which would be very cool.
It would be very cool, wouldn't it? What is, I suppose, the best, if you could pinpoint one best highlight of the job of designing a track? We know what it sounds like, we know it's quite hard, especially when you're having to work from a track that's already built. But if you had to say what the best part of your job is, what is it?
I've got two answers. That for me, honestly, the most satisfying thing, I mean, obviously seeing it unfold on race day, but honestly the thing that I enjoyed most was walking the circuit with the marshals and the ops team. We did a night where we were at the venue. And the Yas Marina operations team, they invited all the marshals to come and walk the circuit with us. And we walked around and you could just see the excitement on their face. They're asking us questions and like all these marshals that give up their time to go and, you know, do these races. It was just a really nice moment to walk around their new circuit with us and kind of answer their questions. And then the other one was I actually got to drive the circuit before it was released. And I did spin. I was the first person to spin a car at turn five. So
a Caterham, perfect car.
Oh, yeah. It's easy to say.
You're going to spin in a Caterham.
Yeah.
Designed it and crashed on it. There we go.
Oh, brilliant. Well, Mark, same question to you.
Yeah, I think almost the same answer as Ben's, really. It's the people you work with and the excitement that you see in the clients and the staff when they start to see that venue come together, and you can see the pride in what they're involved in. And we're very lucky that we do this all over the world with different circuits. And I love working with people from all these different countries. And normally it's on race day. Yas was a little bit different because these people had already delivered races at the circuit, but I love that very first event.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That inaugural event, whether that's Formula One or MotoGP or something else, and just seeing the excitement on people's faces when they first see the cars on track or the bikes and realizing what they've done and the project they've been involved in is being shown live on TV to millions of people.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One. And thanks to F1 Experiences, experiences, you can return to the track this year. And Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 experience package by using the code Motormouth when booking online at f1experiences.com.
You must, is there an element of at the start of the race you're thinking, holy shit, like, if this goes badly,
we had that conversation in the grandstand at turn five. Like, but please, yes, we're like,
please go in three abreast to that corner and come out all in one piece. it must be nerve wracking because that's your job. That's what you're there to deliver. If it's a boring race, you're gonna get people going, well, that didn't work. What a waste of time and money that was. Does that play on your mind at the start of a big race like that?
Yeah. In particular, yes. Ben and I were having conversations, and there's a funny little anecdote that there was some people trying to take credit for some of the work that we were doing, and just thought, well, look, if it does go wrong, we'll blame them. It's fine. But no, it was stressful. We were hoping for positive feedback. We were dreading the interviews with the drivers when they got out of the cars after free practice one, just thinking, what are they going to say about this? And we knew deep down that it worked. We'd both walked the track. Ben had driven it. We'd had feedback from Caroon, but you know what it's like. You just, and the proof of the pudding and all that. So the sound bites we got from the drivers were fantastic. And yeah, some of the drivers were saying, look, we're not sure it's going to improve the race. I think Lando was fairly vocal about the fact that he thought it wouldn't necessarily improve overtaking. But he did say it was much more exciting to drive. And I think that overall it was great.
Did you see, Harry, did you see on the Skypad when Caroon, who obviously knows the changes to that track better than almost anyone, bar the two guys we've got on the call, and he was talking to Damon Hill, and he was like, Damon had done a lap, and he was saying to Damon, so, you know, what do you think of the changes? And Damon had no idea what was going on. He was like, well, I can't really remember what it was like before, and I'm not... Is this turn five? Is this? Have you done something here? You can see Caroon thinking, well, Limonek, this guy's a world champion.
But is that an indication of Damon's memory?
Yes.
The fact that the previous layout wasn't particularly memorable. I'm not entirely sure.
He wouldn't have raced on it, would he, to give
But yeah. Dear old Damon. But I mean, you guys are bricking it. Poor old Caroon. I mean, I'm practically the poster boy on Sky's coverage for the entire track. Anything wrong with it? It was Caroon's fault, wasn't it? But outside of Yas Marina, we mentioned it at the top of the show. You know, the other projects you've worked on. What other highlights are you quite proud of?
I think that Ben may say the same thing as me, but. I've been very fortunate to work on a number of new tracks around the world, but recently we opened a track in Indonesia that is just spectacular. It's a new motorcycle circuit on the island of Lombok next to Bali.
Is that the Mandalika circuit?
Mandalika circuit.
Oh, great. Because they're racing there for the first time, aren't they? Yeah, MotoGP.
Yes, so they're going for a test in February and then racing in March. We had World Superbikes there in November, which was incredibly wet, but the feedback from the riders was fantastic. There was great grip on the track, even in the wet, wheel-to-wheel racing. Jonathan Rea, unfortunately, lost the title for the first time in, 6 or 7 years. Mm. But overall, the racing was amazing. And that location is just spectacular. It's 50 metres from the whitest beach you'll ever see in the bluest ocean. It's like Phillip Island, but with sunshine.
Amazing. Sounds delightful. Now, Ben, I'm going to put you on the spot here. From a designer's perspective, what is the best racetrack that you are aware of on the planet?
That is a tough question. It's really hard to answer because it depends what formulas you're running. Like if you're talking about Formula One, like some of the tracks that I quite like for Formula One would be, I really like COTA from the layout perspective. I like the fast S's at the beginning, the hill climb, you know, the climb up to turn one. The geometry on the hairpin. I think the Budd circuit as well has some features similar to that in India. Bahrain, I really like. I mean, it's weird with Bahrain because in the past that's been kind of muted to have like dull races, but then in recent years it's been really, really exciting. So those kind of like more modern era circuits, Sepang would be another one I'd drop in. from my own perspective, from racing in the UK and around Europe, I love Alton Park and Cadwell Park. They're my two hands down favourite circuits, because they're parkland circuits. They're up and down, blind corners, slightly narrow in places. If you get it wrong, you're punished. So, yeah, it's a hard question to answer. But yeah, they're like the modern era F1 circuits. Those that I named would probably be up there. And then from a driver's perspective, like Alton Park. But I don't think that was really designed as such. It just kind of evolved, like a lot of circuits. And probably the best tracks.
Yeah.
In fairness, kind of doing myself out of a job here, but a lot of the best circuits are the ones that have evolved over the years. You know, the old school tracks. I think a lot of race drivers would say the same thing.
Is there? Do you find, Mark, there's tracks whether you're there in person or you're watching racing on TV that you look at and you think I could really make an impact there, like that? Oh, that corner's crap. I could definitely do something with that chicane. You know, do you find yourself longing and sort of lusting after different racetracks, thinking, yes, like get me in there?
Yeah, I think Ben and I have had similar conversations. We'll watch a race. If we're traveling together and the race is on, we might look at a race and go, yeah, we could do something with that corner, or we could improve something here and there. As all track designers and most fans probably do, if you look at a lot of the social media around the work we did at Yas, there was plenty of criticism as well as positives around it. I think as Ben said, with regards to Cadwell and Alton, and I used to be the ops manager at Brands, which is one of my all-time favourite tracks. The older tracks did evolve. They tended to use topography and land that was available 70 years ago. And I think that we've seen less of that with the modern circuits. They're built to meet modern safety standards. They have to meet the FIA and the FIM requirements, depending on what's racing on them. And I think that means that tracks don't evolve quite as much as they used to. Hopefully, with the work that we've done at Yas, maybe that'll change. Maybe I know that Albert Park has been revised recently, and I'm sure that we'd love to try and dabble with some other circuits if we had the chance.
Well, what is in the pipeline? Is there anything in the pipeline that you could tell us that you're perhaps working on now or for this year?
We're helping to deliver the race in Jeddah. We helped deliver the first race there a week before the Abu Dhabi race. So the end of the season was just insane for us, with Mandalika followed by Jeddah and then Abu Dhabi. And because Jeddah's race has moved from the end of the season to the start of the season, we're straight into planning for the second race. So that race is at the end of March, straight after Bahrain. So we've got a team there with helping with the operation of that track. We weren't involved in the design of the circuit. That's a Tilke circuit. But we look after the track safety and the operational side. The first 3 months of this year, we'll see us bouncing around quite a lot and having lots of PCR tests and spending a bit of time in quarantine, I suspect. In terms of other things in the pipeline, it always surprises me how many people are planning on building racetracks. There doesn't seem to be any let up in the number of inquiries that we're getting, the amount of interest in people building circuits. Not many of them are Formula One or MotoGP tracks. We're getting a lot of interesting club circuits, private members circuits and things like that all over the world. And as soon as we are able to talk about them, we'll let you know.
Very diplomatic.
We've got a cool track coming in Canada from our side, which you should keep an eye on, called Oro Station, which is a new grade 3 track. So, just north of Toronto. So it's North GT Racing and like members club. Cool project. So,
and Hawaii as well. Your project there is pretty interesting as well.
Michael Kitchens? Is that the guy?
That's right.
I had a conversation with him maybe a year ago. When he was just filling up his plate, because he's got a sort of private members thing going on, isn't he? Or sort of I guess they're wealthy people that can afford to put a bit of money in and get some stake in the game. And he seemed to be doing amazing things. And he was very honest. He was like, you know, I've not really done this sort of stuff before, but people seem to be buying into it. And he mentioned the guys at Driven. And
there's not many people that build more than one racetrack. really. Sure. So everyone's kind of doing it for the first time, which is where Mark and I help them out. It's interesting from that perspective.
But that looks pretty special, you know, close to an airport on a tropical island, behind them, in front of the mountains, by the coast. That's going to be a pretty special racetrack when it's all done and dusted, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be epic. I mean, I've been over to see it. It's incredible. So, yeah, we look forward to getting that one up and running for sure. I mean, there's a good market there as well. I think it's like the fourth wealthiest state in the US.
Yeah. Wow.
Like that. So there's some real, you know, there's a lot of celebrities there with like holiday homes. There's a good tourism market. So to go there and do a bit of driving and fun track days whilst you're on holiday, it makes a lot of sense.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's very exciting, isn't it? And actually, we've got a final three questions for you, but I just want to chuck another one in before we get on to that. A while ago, I can't remember what year it was, but I it was when Button and Hamilton were both at McLaren, so 2011 maybe, something like that. They both did a feature where they were sort of basically describing a race through the City of London and how a street circuit, particularly at night, might look. Obviously, that's never come to fruition, but what's your take on the possibility of there ever being some kind of street circuit in London? Is it even possible to do?
I can answer, but I'll throw in first. Anything's possible.
I like that.
I've worked on a number of street circuit concepts all over the world, and there is absolutely the opportunity to have a street circuit in London. I think you need to be very careful about where you do it so that you don't bring the whole city to a grinding halt. But it would certainly be possible.
Well, all right then. Well, of course, Formula E did it, but I suppose you're sort of on a different level, aren't you? They went through the XL, but they're a lot quieter and not as fast. So
that's the challenge. Like for me, it's the practicalities of delivering it. I mean, who knows whether that's, as Mark said, anything's possible, but whether it will happen, I think, remains to be seen. I think, especially with the venue, you've got Silverstone. So, we shall see. But, yeah.
Bring back the Birmingham Super Prix.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, fully on board.
Isn't that the second city in the UK? Yeah, it is, isn't it? Okay, that's fine.
Get yourselves up to Coventry Motor Fest as well. We're doing a little sprint circuit there. It's a really, really cool event that they host every summer. It's free to attend. It's all open for the city, and they do sprint course racing now in the summer. It's really, really cool.
So, cool.
If you're a car fan, it's a good one to put on your list.
Harry's writing it down as we speak.
I'm literally writing it down.
It'd be cool if someone with really deep pockets just came along and went, just take all the best bits of every great racetrack around the world and put them all together and just see what happens. That must be like complete porn for car designers.
Funnily enough, Ben will probably say the same, but a lot of our clients do have their favourite corners that they would like to try and combine to create a new circuit. And in theory, it sounds great, but actually those corners work really well because of where they are.
Yeah.
And when you actually tie in Paddock Hill with the Corkscrew, it just doesn't seem to work quite as well.
Yeah.
And you actually, if you're going to design a track, you want it to stand on its own two feet. You want it to be famous for its own corners and not necessarily because you copied somebody else's.
What makes a great track then? What are the ingredients that you put into a great racetrack?
Yeah, I think everyone will probably give you a slightly different answer. From my perspective, I think elevation helps enormously. Great elevation really does make a big difference. I mean, don't get me wrong, flat circuits like Silverstone and Mandalika is an incredible circuit, but it's reasonably flat. But I do like elevation on a circuit.
Yeah, I would say elevation definitely. You have to have one corner in there that's the hold the breath corner every lap for the driver. So like Copse at Silverstone or even the Maggots Beckett sequence. So you need to have one or two high-speed proper corners and then like technical sequence where you can have some big braking zones for overtaking. So real mix. Like in theory, we could design like the optimum Formula One track from an engineer's perspective. We could make all the F1 engineers really, really happy because we know what they look for to make the cars set up and, you know, how to manage the tyres. But obviously we don't want to do that. We want to make life difficult for them. So, but I would echo what Mark's saying. Like, elevation is key. and then the high speed and the ability to two or three overtaking spots around the lap. You have too many and it just becomes too easy.
Just before we come on to our final three, we keep pushing it back to keep thinking of other stuff, but we've obviously got Miami coming online next year, this year, God.
Yeah.
You've obviously seen, you know, the simulations of that circuit. What do you make of that one?
I think it's definitely following the philosophy we're seeing now with Formula One, where if you look now, all the circuits, including Yas, a lot higher speed. You know, you look at Miami, I think we'll see a lot of cars following there, particularly along the back straights and through the high speed S's. Hard to know, you know, how much overtaking there'll be. It's that as we saw at Yas, you can't really see that until the event unfolds. I think the spectacle will be amazing at the stadium. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be really, I think it'll be one on the list to go to for spectators and VIPs and stuff. It'll become a real kind of go-to event. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it looks like they've done a nice job.
Yeah.
I think the team there know how to put on a good show. And I know that a number of Tim and I, former colleagues from Yas, are over there working on the project. I think it'll be a great event to go to. I'm just disappointed it's not in downtown Miami.
Yeah.
It's one, maybe we'll be VIPs by then, Tim, and we can get to go and have a look around.
Another good case, though, of like you kind of working, like you're working with a lot of constraints around the stadium, the car park and the city. Mm. So I think, you know, I'm sure as designers, like the guys that have been designing it, they would have had a lot of constraints that people don't know about to try and work with. So, but yeah, we shall see.
It'll be interesting. And what is also interesting about Miami, you know, is you mentioned about the show. They're going to put on a great show. There'll be lots of VIPs and celebrities in attendance. So I've been looking into hospitality there for a client, and it's all sold out pretty much. There's one or two teams that have some spare capacity in their paddock clubs and so on. For those that don't know, Paddock Club is the top end hospitality in Formula One. It's very nice. You get lovely food, you get great seats and air conditioned suite, you get driver appearances, all the rest of it, the full shebang. So a weekend ticket at the moment in Miami, bearing in mind it's nearly sold out, is going to cost you anywhere between £12,000 to £13,500 for one person to go for the race weekend.
Ouch.
Unbelievable. It's crazy, crazy money, but people are buying them. People are still paying the money to do it because it's in such high demand. So it should be
quite pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. So Harry, I think we need to up our game if we're to get an invite to that race.
Well, I've got the penny jar, so it's slowly filling up. So maybe by then it might be enough. Might have 13,500 by then. Just for me though, obviously.
I think you could run a live podcast from Miami. It'd be cool.
Oh, I think so. I think that's absolutely on the cards.
Yeah. Well, our friends at F1 Experiences, who are a partner of the show, I think, you know, they're bound to have a suite there. They should have some in-suite entertainment. So, you know.
Absolutely.
Book our flights.
Absolutely. Well, God, I think it is time, though, for our final three, which we ask to all of our guests, which is brought to you by our partners at F1 Experiences. Tim, do you want to kick off with the first one?
Sure thing. To both of you, quick fire questions. Let's start with you, Ben. What's got you excited at this very moment?
Talking to you guys.
Yeah. Finally, someone said it. Mark, same one to you.
I've actually just bought a house in the UK, so I'm pretty excited about that. And it's a bit of a renovation project, so that's really exciting.
So you're moving back? Is this
not permanently. The business is here. We've got various generations of family here. But the long-term plan with kids and school and stuff is to look at coming back. So, yeah, so that, I'm excited about that.
Very good.
That is really exciting. Okay, second question for you both. Mark, we'll start with you this time. What's your favourite racetrack?
Ooh, it's actually a track that not that many people will have heard of, called Bilsterberg in Germany, which is an incredible... We were talking earlier about how much... elevation is important. I think it's important on a racetrack. That's a private club circuit, and it's got something like 43 meters of elevation change. Wow. It's extraordinary. It's one of the few circuits I've driven that I struggle to remember on each lap. It's like a mini Nürburgring. It's really quite spectacular.
Very cool. Ben, you mentioned some before, but could you pick one out?
Yeah, definitely Alton Park, hands down. I mean, for me, like having driven it and raced on it, it's just such a great circuit to drive. It's one of the old school tracks. So for me, Alton Park, the full circuit. I think it helps us also where I won the British Supercar Championship and the O-Plate. So I kind of had good memories of it. It's funny though, because when I first raced there, I didn't like it. I think it's because I broke down. So it's funny how your opinion changes.
Yeah, it's amazing what winning does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Final question to you both. Let's go to you, Mark. What are you scared of?
Snakes is about the only thing I'm terrified of. Absolutely hate snakes.
Have you had an encounter with a snake? Is that why?
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately. Oh. And working in tropical countries and things, we've had numerous encounters with creatures. As Ben may, I've wound Ben up a few times when we've been out in the doing snake visits in jungles and the tropics. But yes, I hate snakes.
Very good. Ben?
Wasps. Bees, I will run. Mark could have answered that point. I will run a mile. I can't sit in my office. If there's a wasp even in the room, I'm gone. I think I actually jumped out of my mum's car once because there was a wasp in there. So I would not recommend that. But yeah, I've got a massive fear of wasps. So it's completely irrational.
Which unfortunately, I take advantage of it.
My mum used to say to me, stand still, stand still. And then I got stung. So I was like, now I just run.
So you've actually been stung. That's fair enough then. If you've actually been stung, I'm just as scared of wasps, I think. But I've never actually been stung by one.
What?
Yeah. But I'm just as scared. I will run for my life.
You should be scared.
Yeah. You've never been stung by a wasp in your entire life?
No, because I run.
Wow. I've been stung.
It's a logical solution, Harry. Logical.
There was I'll tell you what, the other day, 2 days ago even, we were taking out all the Christmas decorations from the house and just cleaning up, saw this gigantic spider appear in the bathroom, and I've never felt more scared. It was the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life. Not tarantula, but like the one down from that. And I just didn't know what to do. I just froze. And I was the only one in the house. Scared me. Get the hell out of me.
Tread on it.
Anyway. What is one down from a tarantula?
Daddy long legs, maybe. That's how I'm describing it, anyway.
You wouldn't have enjoyed being in Chennai. We were on a track walk there, just a little wreck to link it back to the race circuits. And Mark saying he's scared of snakes. So we had a cobra. We were doing a lap around the circuit in just a safety car doing a circuit inspection. I was getting out and walking every now and then just to kind of look at stuff and in the grass, and got back in the car and this cobra up in
Christ.
Yeah.
In
yeah,
the car?
No, like just ahead of us on the circuit.
Oh, God. And
if it was in the car, that would have been a bigger problem. It was on the circuit. And then like before we knew it, seconds, it just off into the grass and it was gone.
It
definitely made me think about walking in long grassy runoff areas.
Oh. That's the trouble. Snakes are much quicker than people realise.
Yeah.
Good snake chat. Love a good snake chat.
Yes.
And I'm amazed, Harry, you've never been stung by a wasp. I'm going to have to rectify that this summer.
That's weird. That doesn't happen ever.
But thank you both very, very much. It's fascinating to hear, actually. It's the first of its kind. We've never had someone like you guys on the podcast before, so it's really interesting to hear how these things work and how they operate and the complexities of it. So thank you both very, very much. Congratulations on the Yas Marina Circuit as well. I think all
thank
the changes
you.
You've made have been very, very well received and very well publicised. It must be a very proud moment to see it going so well, and what a culmination we had to that season, and long may it continue with so much excitement. Mark, good luck with the move. Regards to the family and to all our mutual contacts over in the Middle East. And Ben, good to meet. Make sure you get your booking in for the kart race. Teams are selling fast. And thank you for joining us on the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend. F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com. And if you enter code Motormouth, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.